This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Bored of too many ads and dull, meaningless chat? We've got neither. Joy Drive, smart, fun radio.
With the recent extreme weather we've all been experiencing, what are the rights and responsibilities of renters, landlords and businesses in times of flood, fire and other weather-related situations? Well, let's find out. Nicole Rich is the Director of Consumer Affairs Victoria. Good afternoon, Nicole.
Good afternoon, Warren.
What rights do renters have if their home is destroyed or damaged in a disaster?
Yes. Hello, and this is a sort of tough topic, isn't it? Some people have certainly been affected by these sorts of events in the last few months. It's great that we're having this chat. And I think rental issues is probably the number one thing that we see come up when there's been, you know, a natural disaster or an extreme weather event, because it can obviously affect properties. So that tends to be the very first thing that really hits people and they want to know what to do. So if you're a renter and your home has been damaged in some way or maybe even really destroyed in example of a fire, there are laws that apply to that situation. So generally speaking, I mean, if a property has been totally destroyed or essentially damaged to the point that you just, it's unfit to live in or it's just unsafe, then basically either you, the renter or the rental provider, the landlord, can issue an immediate sort of notice to end the agreement. And that's just a recognition that essentially the property that's the subject of the rental agreement doesn't exist anymore. Right. So it kind of lets you out of your obligations one way or the other under the rental agreement. We can talk about what happens after that. If the property's still intact, it just essentially needs repairs, then basically the same laws that would apply more generally will continue to apply. So if you just don't want to live there anymore, but it is habitable, that's tricky if you're a renter because the lease is still on foot and basically you'd have to negotiate with the rental provider if you want to finish your rental agreement early, or you have to give notice in the same way that you would generally. If you're a rental provider, then it does trigger obligations to conduct repairs, but that can be hard after an emergency or a disaster as well.
Let's say the property, you know, it is, I suppose, written off in the disaster. What happens to the bond?
Yes. So if the property's been completely destroyed and then essentially either the renter or the rental provider ends the lease, then the same thing happens as normally happens. So once a rental agreement finishes, the bond should be returned to the renter. And like, as is the case with, you know, other rental arrangements, if there's a dispute about who the bond gets paid for, then you go through that process. But if the property was basically totally destroyed, it's pretty hard to see how there could be a dispute about the bond. The bond really should just be returned to the renter immediately. As a rental provider, you are not entitled to take money out of the bond to help pay for repairs or damage caused by the extreme weather. You know, a bond is there to guarantee the cost of things like repairs that are actually caused by the renter. So if there's damage but it's not caused by the renter, you don't really have any right to claim anything out of the bond.
Nicole, what about the contents of the house? What happens there?
Yeah, so that obviously can also be like quite a devastating impact on people. So, I mean, essentially renters are responsible for their own possessions or belongings in the property. That's not the rental provider's responsibility. So generally the renter would have to cover that. Sometimes renters will have their own contents insurance, home contents insurance, which would hopefully cover that. So it's a, you know, good reminder to think about having contents insurance as a renter, which sometimes I know renters don't have, but you know, can be really important, particularly if you're in an area where you could be prone to extreme weather. Look, unless a rental provider can be shown to have contributed in some way to being negligent, to the damage being caused, the renter's going to have to bear that cost.
Nicole, is there any situation where the rental provider is legally obliged to provide alternate accommodation?
Yeah, so this is a really common query, but I mean, essentially the answer is no. So under Victorian rental laws, there's no obligation for your landlord or your rental provider to find you alternative accommodation if something happens. I mean, it is obviously a really difficult situation. And we've often seen cases where rental providers really actually try and ring around their networks and things to help a renter out in these kind of circumstances, but there's no actual legal obligation to do so. So it is a really tough time for renters, obviously, when these kind of things happen. As I say, we often see estate agents actually go out of their way to try and help renters, and rental providers do the same. But ultimately, it's up to renters to find a new place to live. Often there are a lot of services available when these things happen, so we just really encourage people to make use of those. You know, ring the government hotline for help, go down to see your local council about what services are available, because it can be really tough.
We're chatting with Nicole Rich, Director of Consumer Affairs Victoria, about extreme weather events and the rights and responsibilities of renters, landlords and businesses. Nicole, let's say the property is damaged, but, you know, the renter can still live there. Should the rent be reduced?
Yeah, so that's a great question. We would generally say quite possibly yes. So if there's significant damage to the property, it's obviously not enough that you need to leave or find somewhere to live, but, you know, you clearly can't use certain key things in the property. I don't know, it could be you can't use the shed or the outbuildings anymore, or the garage or the pool, or the outdoors is completely ruined, or even one or two rooms are not usable until they're repaired. I mean, essentially that's the equivalent of taking property, you know, parts of the property or services away under your original rental agreement. And Victoria's rental laws say that, you know, if things are being taken away, then generally you can seek to amend the rent. So we'd really encourage any rental providers in those circumstances to consider reducing the rent. And renters do actually have the right to challenge the rent if they don't see a rent reduction in those circumstances and they think that their current rent is basically unreasonable until the repairs are conducted. So where that happens, it's not really common, but it can happen. The first thing we would always suggest a renter do if they're not having any luck negotiating is actually to call us, and we can provide some further advice and potentially some help in negotiating that as well.
Just on the damage, is there a time limit that the repairs must be carried out by?
Yeah, it's the same laws, Warren, as in general. So urgent repairs need to be attended to
like
immediately.
A hot water service, is it considered urgent?
Non-urgent repairs. You still really have to do them, generally speaking, within 2 weeks. The only thing I'd say to that is, you know, I just encourage everybody, obviously, to be reasonable in the circumstances as well. Like, often when there's been a disaster come through an area, it's really awful for everybody, including the rental provider or the property owner, as well as the renters. And it is an obligation on the rental provider and the agent to attend to the repairs immediately. But it can be really hard to secure tradespeople and even actually the materials to do the repairs. We know that, like, there can be a real shortage after a disaster. So, you know, yes, the rental provider needs to get onto it straight away. If it takes a few more weeks than it normally would, that may not be unreasonable, where it's actually just genuinely due to things like shortages.
You just reminded me of a conversation we had earlier on about those dodgy tradies that take advantage of situations, you know, where there is a bit of a natural disaster or something like that. Is that something
absolutely
still to be aware of?
Yes, this is one of, like, I really get worried about this. It's one of the first things whenever there's these kind of events, one of the first things that Consumer Affairs Victoria does is try and get warnings out to people in the local affected communities about exactly that issue, Warren. So we know there'll be a lot of demand to do repairs, including urgent repairs. Renters, you know, need it done. Rental providers and estate agents are trying to do the right thing. They feel under pressure. And then these people turn up saying, hey, we can fix your roof, you know, we can fix this and that. Just give us some cash up front and we'll do it straight away. So this fake tradie problem is particularly prevalent after emergencies and disasters. It's one of the top problems that we see. So it's just another reminder. We've had that long chat before, but yes, just another reminder, if you're in these kind of affected areas, just be on the lookout for fake tradies and unlicensed traders. We know you're feeling the pressure to get things done, but please do not, you know, just pay cash up front without doing some ref checks, being really careful, making sure you've checked credentials. If they need a license, doing that first. If you've got insurance, checking with your insurer first. I would just say, like, be wary of anybody that turns up on your doorstep just offering unsolicited to fix things for you. I would just say always shop around, just be really careful.
What about genuine tradespeople or businesses? Are they able to approach customers after a disaster to supply goods or services?
Look, yes. I mean, genuine businesses and tradespeople can do that. Under the Australian consumer law, there are laws that apply to what we call unsolicited sales. So if someone turns up on your doorstep, it's considered a door-to-door sale. There are obligations that apply. You should have a cooling off right. They can only knock on your door at certain times. In a narrow set of circumstances after things like an emergency or a disaster, there are some exceptions. So if there's been a state of emergency declared and it's for a particular type of work, but in some ways I almost don't even want to go into that. That's, you know, something businesses can look up if they think they're in that circumstance, and usually government and local councils would help facilitate that. But if you're the consumer, I think rather than worrying about whether the business has the right to approach you or not, I'd probably just say the key message is, just be really wary if someone's turning up on your doorstep and knocking on the door and offering to do repairs for you and you haven't asked them to come and give you a quote. If it's unsolicited, just be really careful.
Nicole, we had that recent weather event here in Victoria where those three pylons fell down and, you know, we had supply problems to many customers. What should renters do if the utilities are cut off? Who's responsible for fixing those?
Yeah, that's right. There was a lot of coverage of that, wasn't there, Warren? Mm. So a lot of homeowners and renters were affected. And sometimes it can be hard to know what to do when your utilities have been cut off. So if they've been cut off because a big transmission tower went down, there's not a lot that you can do as either a homeowner or a landlord or a renter until that's fixed, obviously. If you're like, you know, your utility, whether it's like electricity, gas or water, is being cut off because of damage to the property itself, then obviously that's an urgent repair and a rental provider is going to be responsible for needing to repair that ASAP because it's clearly an urgent repair. If there's not damage to the property, it's just something to do with the situation or some other cause, then, you know, everybody who is the kind of account holder, which will be the renter in the case of the utilities, is sort of responsible for that. And if you're the renter, the rental provider is not necessarily going to switch your electricity back on. You probably just need to keep up to date with the, the electricity or the gas company directly yourself to find out what's happening.
What if our car's been damaged in a disaster?
Yeah, we do see that. I mean, probably the only thing that didn't sweep through Victoria in the last few months was another hailstorm event, right? Like we got fires, we got extreme storms, we got heat wave, we've had floods. Let's just cross our fingers. We haven't had one of those hailstorm events. So we get a lot of questions about car damage, particularly after that. But obviously we've had some storm events and fire and so on as well. Cars get damaged in those sorts of events. So obviously people are going to turn their attention to getting their car fixed at some point. Clearly, if you've got insurance, the first thing you should do is make a claim. And kind of one of my key pieces of advice is just make the claim with your insurer. Don't, you know, sometimes people think they've made a claim, they've had a chat to the insurer. You haven't made the claim until you put in your claim. So just put in your claim and then you can, you know, things will go from there. And the insurer will help you in working out like whether you can go to a local mechanic, whether they've got a particular mechanic, all that sort of thing. If you don't have insurance, then obviously you have to consider, you know, what you want to do, how much you can afford, which mechanic you're going to use. I'd still suggest shopping around, getting some quotes so that you get a good deal. If you're kind of looking to buy a new or used car following a storm event, then motor car traders, they can sell you vehicles that maybe have been damaged in the event and they've now been repaired, but they do need to tell you about any issues with a vehicle before you buy it. And I guess just there's a bit of buyer beware here. If a trader or if you're buying in a private sale, once they've told you, you know, this car's a bit cheaper than normal because it did get damaged in this event, then you're kind of on notice. So you just need to be really careful. You need to decide whether you want to buy the car when you've been put on notice. If you're buying from a motor car trader, you might need to check whether the warranty that you ordinarily get is going to cover that sort of damage, because it might be limited if you've actually been forewarned that there are certain issues with the car. So you just have to be really careful.
I think I'd just walk away.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I'm sure many people who are listening, you know, how many times have you been told, like, a friend or a family member bought a car that maybe they'd been told, like, somebody drove it through floodwaters, but it's fine, it's been repaired, and, like, they just never see the end of problems? with the cars. You just have to be really careful, I think, in those situations.
I'm only laughing because I bought a car at auction, one of those four-wheel drive utes, years and years ago when I had the farm, and I was driving over the Westgate Bridge and the engine caught on fire.
Just a
few weeks afterwards. Anyway, it was cheap.
Pretty frightening as
well. It was pretty frightening, actually, and it was more disappointing. It was like, oh, no, I've been ripped off.
That's right, probably a topic. Maybe we can get back to cars later in the year, because I actually would always just say, just generally, when you're just an ordinary consumer and you're going along to one of those auctions, like what you just described, because you think you're going to get a good deal with the car, I would say unless you're really savvy, like unless you yourself are a mechanic or something, it's quite risky, so you just have to be really careful at those car auctions, Warren.
Someone looked at it and said, oh, why is this piece held together with sticky tape? So, my fault. Anyway, we've spoken about the fake tradies. I mean, there's lots of terrible people that capitalise on a disaster, and some of those are charity and fundraising scams. How can we spot those if they're happening?
Yeah, it's so awful, isn't it? It sort of brings out the best and the worst in our community, because, like, it is amazing to see the community rally around people that have been affected by these kind of events. And people are so generous and they want to donate, and we absolutely want to support that. And there's really terrific organisations, well-established charities, often government funds that are set up. So absolutely please consider making donations to those. But unfortunately, a bit like the fake tradies, you get the fake charities that people set them up to take your donations and prey on your goodwill, and then they just disappear. So there's probably a couple of top tips. We would suggest approaching charities directly rather than sort of responding to an unsolicited phone call or an email. So even if it's an unsolicited email from a charity that is kind of a familiar brand, we would just encourage you to be really careful and maybe just make the call or the go visit the website yourself to make those donations. Just don't respond to unsolicited call outs. Please don't give out your personal details, your credit card details, your bank details, unless you've initiated the contact. Right. If it's been unsolicited, don't do it. And don't hand over cash to someone who isn't wearing proper identification. You know, proper collectors will wear a proper ID badge. You know, you can then check with the charity or the fundraiser whether they really are collecting in person in that area on that day or not. So just be really careful about anybody that you're not approaching yourself.
It really is bad, isn't it? Because these people are stressed. You know, they're high anxiety, in a state of high anxiety, and, you know, probably less likely to be a bit clear thinking about things and, you know, writing down a checklist, etc., and more easily, I suppose, fooled into making mistakes. I just think it's just terrible.
It is terrible because it is sort of preying on people's vulnerability and stress in those situations, and then it preys on other people's goodwill to try and help people. So, look, I don't know, it's that whole... You know, we see that whole range of human behaviour at consumer affairs. Mm. Unfortunately, we see the good and the bad. So we're just trying to remind all the good people out there to be a bit wary of the bad and just take those extra steps to make sure you're not caught up in it.
Nicole, great to chat with you. Thank you so much for joining us on Drive.
Thanks, Warren.
Chat to you next time.
Absolutely.
Thank you. That is Nicole Rich, the Director from Consumer Affairs Victoria. For more information regarding your consumer rights on this topic or any other, check out the Consumer Affairs Victoria website. It's consumer.vic.gov.au.
Joy Drive on Joy 94.9 FM in Melbourne, Joy on your digital radio, iHeartRadio, tunein.com or the Joy app, no matter where you are.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.